Okay, good morning. This is Richard Hsu, host of Hsu Untied. Today, I'm very honored and pleased to have as my special guest, Bill Gross, fellow Caltech alum, Caltech trustee, entrepreneur, investor, founder of Idealab. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Bill, I want to actually start with, I know you've told this story numerous times, but I always enjoy hearing it, and I'm sure my listeners will too, is you actually got your first idea, I think, when you were at Caltech or maybe even in high school. Tell me a little bit about how you started your first business.
Well, actually, in junior high school, I was selling candy bars at the bus stop. That was my very first way of making money. I don't know if I call that a business, but it was a lot of fun. It was an entrepreneurial, it was maybe my version of the lemonade stand.
Yeah.
And then in high school, I was in high school in 1973 in the San Fernando Valley down here in Southern California, right when the energy crisis occurred, when the Arab oil embargo happened. And there were long lines to buy gasoline. Gasoline was rationed at $5 per day maximum, and you only could even buy it on odd and even number days based on the last digit of your license plate. And I thought, boy, solar energy might be a solution to this world energy problem. I wanted to work on solar energy. So I started making little solar devices and little plans and kits and sold them in the back of Popular Science magazine. And that was called Solar Devices, and that was actually my first maybe real business. And then in college, I made loudspeakers on campus. There was a student shop, and it enabled me to make my dream audio system, but then also other students on campus wanted the speakers I made, so I began selling speakers, and they were called GNP for Gross National Products. So that was really a lot of fun.
That's funny. And as you know, I still have my set of – I bought my GNP speakers in 1989, and I still have them proudly in my living room.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great to hear. Incredible.
So tell me, Bill, I'm curious to know – I mean, for somebody like you who's constantly coming up with ideas, and I go on the Idealab website and I see just hundreds of companies, how do you decide what's a good idea versus a great idea versus one that's a great idea but not a good moneymaker? I mean, how do you actually filter the ideas that you come up with?
Well, that is one of the toughest parts. Basically, the two hardest things I would say for me are figuring out which ideas to take forward, and then later figuring out which ideas to kill. If they're not working, trying to figure out if it's the right time to end it. But on taking the ideas forward, we do have more ideas than we can do, so that we have to filter them in many different ways. One big way is, can we find a CEO and leadership team that is passionate about and wants to take that idea forward? That's one big, big filter. But on the idea side, what we try to look at is, it's so hard to convince people to buy a product, take a product, use a product, there needs to be some pull from the user. There needs to be some so strong demand that almost if you take the product away from them, they get angry. And we try and take ideas and put it through some kind of testing phase to see if consumers respond, or businesses, whatever, whoever the customer is for the product. If they respond that way, that they want this thing so badly that they're actually angry if you take it away from them. And that's one filter we look for to see if an idea is good enough to take forward.
How do you figure out when to kill an idea?
For killing an idea, what we try to do is, there's always new learning that you can get as you're testing new things. And the whole lean startup philosophy, which is really basically the scientific method applied to business, of having a hypothesis, then doing an experiment, and then learning something from it. We always try and apply that to a business that's struggling. Well, we try and apply that to a business that's succeeding as well. But to a business that's struggling, we always try and apply that idea of, let's figure out what we could do to change things. Let's have a hypothesis of what might work. Let's have a timetable for doing that experiment, and let's see what we learn. Well, you always learn something. But if the learning is diminishing on each new test, sort of if you're converging to nothingness, like you're not learning enough new to break out of the current situation you're in, after a few tests like that, then we pretty much decide it's time to end this idea, because we're not coming up with a new thing that's going to cause us to break out of whatever the doldrums we're in. Now, it's very hard to be disciplined and do that, but that's the thing that we try to practice. Lean startup methodology, and then killing things when we have convergence as opposed to divergence towards success.
Which part of it between the idea of testing the idea and making it, going, taking it forward versus just coming up with the idea, which one do you like better?
Well, I do love both of them, but I really love the coming up with ideas. Like, I love walking around the world and seeing things that are not as good as they could be and trying to figure out, well, what could you do to make that better? And especially if there's a technological solution. And that part is just so fun and addictive to me. I just do it naturally. It's not even a job. I mean, I just walk around through life and doing that. So that's why I pretty much come up with almost an idea a day. Of course, out of those ideas, some of them are crazy. Some of them won't work. Some of them are impractical. But usually from an idea a day, we can pick one a month to take forward. And we try and pick the best idea each month and take that forward.
That must really be amazing. Do you write down every idea you have?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I have a spreadsheet that has every day I try and have one idea in it. And then once a week we meet with the team. In fact, my idea meeting today is at 9 o'clock, right after our meeting today, where the whole team gets together. We go over the ideas from the past week, not only from me, but from everybody. We refine them. We laugh at some of them. And then we pick some to actually put some work into. And then usually by the end of, we start usually between 8 and 10 companies a year. So not quite one a month, but usually once every month or 2 months, we come up with one that we're so excited about that we decide to actually form a company around.
I'm assuming this spreadsheet that you guys is pretty massive at this point.
Yeah. No, that's like 2,000 rows now. So
wow, that's pretty much. Well, when you come up with all these ideas, do you find that? I mean, on one hand, it's an amazing ability, but then is it also like a curse too? Because you get burdened, like, God, I just got all these ideas, and there's not enough time in your life or money to pursue all the good ideas, I'm sure.
Well, I totally feel that way, and I would say, like I said earlier, it's frustrating at times, but it's wonderful to do. I mean, I love doing it. It's frustrating, usually not. You said not enough time or money. There is enough time, and there usually is enough money. It's people. It's just finding people who have the capacity, the enthusiasm, the skills, and the timing to take the ideas forward.
What tends to inspire your ideas? Do you just get them while you're in the shower? Do you have to be hearing some very interesting TED talk? Or what actually germinates these ideas typically?
Well, it's a little bit of all of them. But so TED talks for sure, and sometimes in the shower for sure. The shower, because your brain is so clear. But often it's just walking around in life and experiencing the challenges. So, one idea we're talking about in the company that I didn't come up with, but someone else came up with, they just said, I would love to have an Uber-like service where I can have gas put in my car so that I don't have to go to the gas station anymore. And another one that I had when I was on vacation last week was just walking through a city. I would love to see where the almost like the check-ins on Foursquare, but I'd like to see the footprints of other people in the city and what museums they spent time in, what restaurants they spent time in. I love to filter it by different people, by like foodies, by friends of mine, by people into archaeology and so on. So the idea of just trying to take, I was standing on a corner and saying, I wonder what neat places are around me. And of course there's Yelp and of course there's other services, but to filter it by people who have tastes like yours and have it be something that people could do effortlessly, I thought maybe there's some unique way to use the GPS to do that. So that's just the beginning of an idea. I was calling it like breadcrumbs or a heat map or something like that. But now we're discussing it, and maybe we'll come up with an angle that would make something like that practical. So a lot of the ideas just come from living life and saying, I wish there were, and then trying to take that I wish there were into an idea for a company.
I was just curious. So, obviously Do you recognize the fact that your ability to come up with these ideas is pretty incredible? I'm assuming you haven't. Have you ever met anybody who comes up with as many ideas as you do, for example?
Oh, well, actually, I don't think it's that incredible. I think that almost anybody could do this. I really do. I just think it's a mindset, and it's a mindset of looking at the things that are the pain points in your life and other people's lives and writing them down, and then working to think through a way to solve them. I really don't think it's anything spectacular, but it's just something that I love doing. So it's really more of just a joy than anything else.
What is one idea that you came up with that you were sorry that you couldn't take, the leaps to mind that you couldn't take it forward because there wasn't any, but you thought it was a great idea? There must be a couple of examples of that.
Oh, well, one is back in about 2000, I had a very early idea, even before the term was invented, of quantified self. I didn't know that word, and no one did. But the idea of wearing something on your arm that would measure things about your body and then try and help you improve your health. And what I really wanted to do was have a lot of people wear it and then correlate it with their medical records and use it to be predictive of ailments that people have in the future by looking at dietary and movement and other body temperature and heart rate and things like that. And basically, at the time, I had the name for it. I was going to call it My Life. It was going to record everything about your life, but also then help you improve your life. And it was too early, and we weren't able to raise money for it, and we weren't able to explain it very well. And then here, 15 years later, now, with the Apple Watch coming out in a few weeks, but also with Fitbit and with so many other devices, I actually think this is going to be a big part of life. And I wish I had stuck with it a little bit longer so I was ready for this new wave where people are ready for it now. Of course, when I had that idea, the smartphone hadn't even been invented yet, so it was maybe a little bit too early. Then another one, I had an idea for a super streamlined single-person or two-person vehicle. And I worked on that from about 2008 to 2012, but eventually the company went out of business. It was called Aptera. But now I start seeing things like that. Like I was just at TED, and Toyota has a car called the iRide, which is a little bit like that. And I was just in Europe, and I saw a Renault car called the Twizy, which is a little bit like that. And I sort of see that happening now, and I'm sort of sad that we didn't stick with it, but I'm very happy that it's happening. And I just think that personal transportation really is going to be shaken up by the driverless car, but also by electric cars, but also by smaller vehicles that aren't carrying around as much extra sheet metal when it's not necessary. Mm-hmm. Like there's still a reason to have an SUV if you're going with 8 people camping. Mm. But to drive an SUV everywhere when you're alone is silly.
When you see something like that happen, an idea that comes out, you know, 8 or 10 years later, even though you thought about it before with too early time, does that upset you? Like you're thinking, I'm too much of a visionary? Like, does that bother you? Or
well, it used to upset me a lot. And then I learned, hey, every idea is going to happen someday. So it really is all about timing. You really have to think through, is your idea ready? Is the world ready for you right now? So now I actually think timing is a big factor in successive ideas, much more than I previously thought. Mm. I've been giving a talk about that lately, that actually assessing the timing of your idea is maybe almost as important, if not more, than actually the quality of the idea, because the world has to be ready for what you have. So I've learned that that's an important part, so I don't beat myself up over that anymore.
Huh. So let me ask you this, not that you're getting older or anything like that, but as you know, obviously as you are getting older and you've been, you know, thinking of ideas all this time and technology is changing obviously way more than say you were in high school, do you actually find that the number of ideas is actually accelerating as you're getting a little older?
Yeah, I actually do. I think there's just so much opportunity now. Well, here's maybe one reason. Of course, the smartphone and Moore's Law bring unbelievable opportunities to the planet. But technological advances have been amazing. And you might think that maybe we're running out of things to do, but I think it's the exact opposite. Like you said, there's more things. And here's why. First, it's gotten way cheaper to try something. Yeah. There are so many open source tools and so much infrastructure in place that even only 20 years ago, we started Idealab 20 years ago, when we wanted to start a company and say build a simple e-commerce experiment, it might cost $2 million to get the servers and build the thing to handle credit cards and buy the databases and all that. Well, now it doesn't cost $2 million. It costs $2. Right. You know, you can buy Amazon Cloud and you can use open source this and open source that, and you can be prototyping your idea for nothing. So that's a big change. That means there's more explosive opportunities to test. But then why there's even more opportunities? With 2 billion people connected on smartphones, heading to 4 billion in just a few years, you know, more than half the planet will be connected this decade. Mm. It just means that there's room for what previously would be micro audiences, like only a small subset of the population, like but maybe 10 million or 50 million people, only a tiny fraction of the planet, now you can reach that exact subset with your idea. So that just means there's so many more potential opportunities because you can now talk to the whole planet. It used to be when I started a company, you know, my selling candy, my reach was the bus stop. You know, then when I started selling my loudspeakers, my reach was the Pasadena area. Then when I started selling software, I could reach, you know, the people near stores in the United States when I started selling my Knowledge Adventure software, my educational software company. And then with the internet, I could reach the planet, but only people who had browsers or only 50 million people online. You know, this is back in 1996. But now with 2 billion people always connected, you can reach the pockets of people that want what you have everywhere. And that just means there's way more opportunity for new ideas. So I think it's actually getting better, faster, cheaper. Just every opportunity is really incredible.
Do you ever reflect on the fact that you feel fortunate that you were born in the time during this era? Otherwise, if you'd been born 50 years earlier, you wouldn't have had access to all this.
No, I definitely would have missed all of that. I do sometimes wish I was born maybe in the time of Leonardo, because I'm really a mechanical engineer. I would have loved to make the mechanical contraptions that he was drawing, or that I might have been drawing at that time. But I'm really fortunate to be alive now. I mean, I think that the chance to improve the planet when you come up with something is so much more substantial now. You can really have a positive impact on the world in a way you couldn't in any other time in history. So that's very exciting.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're super busy, but I really appreciate you taking the time and speaking with me.
Great. This was really a pleasure. Thanks very much.
This is Richard Hsu and Bill Gross.